I can't compete physically, so I've got to work on my sex appeal, my body language, my conversation skills. I've got to work on these things. You've got a choice. Either you quit and become bitter, buy a cat, or you take action.
Do you ever wonder what makes a man go for a woman or a woman go for a man? It's funny dating because it feels almost, and this is especially true when you're married or coupled up, it feels almost peripheral. You're not dating anyone and perhaps your friends aren't really anymore. And this idea of going to meet a new person just feels like a funny thing that a former you once did, a university student with a silly modern app of some sorts. But dating and mating, meeting the one, is at the heart of everything. And you only have to watch those David Attenborough nature shows to see how fundamental it is to who we eventually became. And so with that as a bit of an introduction, I wanted to present today's guest. It's Kezia Noble. Now, Kezia is one of the top dating gurus, perhaps even the world's leading female dating and attraction expert. She has all sorts of courses for men who are anxious about meeting women on her website, kezia-noble.com, including the 7-day mastery course made up of one-to-one training that she does with people. She helps men build up the confidence to approach women and then to think of stuff to say in the subsequent conversations, which is harder than it seems. I suppose we can all sit here sort of smugly, those of us who are in relationships, and go, oh God, it's just having a conversation. But that's a little bit harsh, and we should remember that it is hard, you know, when you're in that sort of bar setting and there's music playing and you've done the hello and you've said a few jokes and stuff, and then you've got like, well, 2 hours with someone with whom you have no frames of reference. So it is a bit tough, and she's got all sorts of tips for that. And I think those tips help not just for dating. I think they're really good for just socializing in general. So, you know, I was intrigued what it's like to be a dating guru and what kinds of things that Kezia has to help guys with. And I think this one will be fascinating for women too, to understand what the man approaching you or approaching your friend or daughter or whoever it might be is thinking or going through. Again, that's kezia-noble.com. You can get her free ebook, 10 Ways to Get a Woman Interested in You. She also has a big YouTube channel under her name where she posts videos with tips and all sorts of things. So go send her some love, go subscribe, or get in touch with her if you want some advice. Coming up on the podcast are episodes with American psychologist Todd Kashtan about the art of insubordination, basically how to protest, as well as, you know, social relationships, curiosity, and a host of other fascinating things. And then celebrity James Altucher, I'll tell you all about him if you don't know who he is once we start chatting, and the sniper with the record for the longest ever kill. So it's going to be really interesting getting into his mind. But now you're on the edge of human dating and relationships with Kezia Noble. Kezia, thanks for joining me on the show. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, good, good. I'm so happy to have you here. I've watched you talking and stuff, and you're amazing, really interesting, fascinating stuff. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you do.
Okay, so I'm a dating and attraction expert for men. I don't help women because I always say that would be like the blind leading the blind. I've been doing this since 2006. I've had my own company since 2010. That coincided with my book launch for my book, The Noble Art of Seducing Women. I did not pick that title. That was my publisher's choice. I'd have picked something much more subtle than that, but the book has done very well. And so I now have a team of 20 to 30 people around the world, and we help guys on our programs, on our courses online and in person to get better with women, you know, to learn how to approach women, how to build up interactions, make them more impactful, connective, how to build attraction, how to get a number, just to feel more comfortable with women, understand women better. And it also just helps them improve their overall confidence.
Right. And what is it you don't like about the book title they chose?
It's a play on my name, Noble, which is always very cringe. It's like, I know there's so much you could, my surname's quite good for that. You could do so, like your surname, that's probably a really That's a good one you can do a lot with.
Gold, always believe in your soul. Yeah. Everyone sings that at me. Although Americans don't know what that is, so they just think I've made up a song.
But you could put a book called Go for Gold or, you know, something like this. So they put a play on my name. I was like, oh, God. And then it was like seducing women. I was like, I don't like the word seducing. I would have preferred something to do with attraction or something like that. But they said, no, it's to do with... They know better than me, essentially. They said, you know, when people are browsing on Amazon, there's certain keywords. And I was like, you know what, I'll write the book, you do the marketing.
Fair enough. Like, I know that feeling as well. You've got to sort of leave it in their hands. And I guess if I was someone who was employing the services of a dating expert, something I haven't yet done, and I probably won't now because I'm engaged. So,
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. God, it's a weird thing saying I'm engaged because it feels like you are insisting that someone then say congratulations. That's why I can't say, I can't introduce her as my fiance because again, it feels like I'm showing off or that I'm expecting a congratulation.
Oh no, you should. Look, I've been engaged, I've been married, I've been divorced, but the engagement part is wonderful. No, you've definitely got to, you know, milk it for everything it's worth.
I'm gonna milk it. I mean, look, of course you think that because that is the end goal, I suppose, of every, I guess the marriage itself, you leave that to another person, like to sort that out. But the getting to the engagement part, that's, or at least getting on the first date, I suppose. What kind of guys are coming to see you?
Okay, so the youngest that we've helped is 18, the oldest so far is 78. It was his daughter that actually said, wow. Get off your ass, Dad. Get on the course. He was a widow, poor thing. It was an awful, like, situation he was in.
No.
Yeah, he was like, he had had a terrible illness, which left him half paralyzed. It was just an awful story. It's so amazing. It's someone at 78, he just finally says, I don't want to be like this anymore. I want to find happiness again. But that's like 78, very unusual, you know. Our average...
Did you help him?
Yeah, of course. We did help him.
What happened?
We did our 7-day mastery program and he got used to, he was actually quite good at talking to women. He was old school. Old people are good at talking. You know, it's the young people that are all like tongue tied and awkward. Old people kind of like, they come from a different era where people just spoke to each other more. So he was a lot better than we thought. He was, you know, he's going for women who are like 60 and 70. He's not going for 25-year-olds.
This is a contentious thing in itself because I think of, you know, mothers of friends of mine and stuff who often are single and they're like, you know, 60-odd. And they go on these dating apps and all they can find are people who are like 80 as men, whereas the men who are 78 are going for 60-year-old. They're all right, you know. So a 60-year-old man can go out of a 40-year-old woman, whereas a 6-year-old woman is basically stuck looking after somebody, you know, in a retirement home.
Why don't they just change their search options and put younger men? Look, I don't use dating apps, and we can talk about that. I don't use dating apps, but I do know how they work. I have trialed them. I had to do my research on them. So I do know that you can change the settings for, like, you know, what you're looking for. And age is one of them that they allow you to do. But just going back to your initial question about the kind of guys, the average guy that comes to us, I would say average is actually around kind of like between sort of, it's getting younger, to be honest, but I would say average would be late 30s. And that's because a lot of our guys at that age are like, you know, coupling up, they're settling down. They're in that kind of, it's a weird time in their lives when they sort of want to go out still and have a good time. They still have that energy, but they're becoming an old man also. And they feel a bit awkward maybe going out to a nightclub at like 38 or 39. They shouldn't, but that's how they feel. So a lot of guys are sort of left stranded. They're like, where are my buddies? You know, they're all sitting at home with their fiancés and wives and kids, and I'm sort of on my own and I've got no wingman anymore. So what do? A lot of them come out of long-term relationships because a lot of people are in relationships all the way through their early 30s and then suddenly nothing happens. And then again, they left stranded because a lot of people in relationships neglect other areas of their lives, which is understandable. They sort of neglect their friendships, their hobbies, things like that. Sometimes even their career, their appearance. And then something happens unexpectedly, sometimes not unexpectedly, and then they're sort of like at ground zero. So we're helping a lot of people who are like in that position also. But we help guys also who are very good with women, in fact, and they just want to push the envelope a little bit and get like a higher caliber of woman or a certain type of woman.
It's such a complex thing, isn't it? Because I suppose you want to think that you fall into a relationship rather serendipitously, that you sort of, you know, you're just sort of matched and it works. And then the idea of maybe having rigid rules that you find from a teacher of sorts, that sort of goes against that. I mean, is this something that you can teach? I can imagine, I know what you're going to say.
No, you can teach it, but I am with you. Like, it does feel like it takes away the magic. You know, you feel like, and we've all been there, like, you know, like I said, I don't use dating apps and things, and all my previous boyfriends, it was through like chance, and it was just something about him, and I was at the right place at the right time, we had that chemistry. I get it, but there's some point where if someone hasn't experienced that, or they haven't experienced it for a long time, then they've got a choice. I mean, you can always just have that kind of what if, you know, it might happen, but you've got to also be realistic and think it might not. So I need to take measures. I need to know when I do meet a girl that I like, that I'm not just kind of like hoping, you're wishing upon a star, that chemistry unfolds. It can happen, and that's what we all want, obviously, but I think we've got to be realistic, especially now. We're living in a time where there's a sort of artificial abundance. There's an artificial abundance of potential partners, and that's what, again, social media and the dating apps provide. It's this artificial idea that, you know, it's just everybody's replaceable, and there's always somebody next to take that person's place. And that, you know, that makes it very difficult for people to build connections with each other. Imagine, you know, feeling like you're just like one click away from being replaced. I mean, that was not the case 20 years ago. People gave each other, I think, more of a chance than just maybe a 5-minute conversation.
Well, it's also easier to meet people, I think, because you've got all those apps. I mean, those apps came into place, really got popular after I was already in a relationship, so I wasn't able to really give them a go. But I mean, are you getting people who are just really struggling? Do you ever get incels coming to you?
No, they are in a category that doesn't want to be helped.
Okay. Oh, we should say what they are as well. I'm just thinking for people, you know, involuntary celibates. A group of people, they're often, perhaps some say unfairly, linked to school shootings and things, but, you know, involuntary celibates, people who believe that they are celibate or unable to have sex because they are so unattractive. And it's often not the case, although I know I'll get shouted on YouTube because they say, oh, no one would go for me because I'm unattractive. I think sometimes they don't want to look at the fact that they're not employing perhaps some of the techniques that you would teach, or they're not being charismatic enough, and then they get angry and go, oh, it's easy for you to say, and all that stuff. So it's quite complicated, isn't it?
It is very complicated, but I was on a debate on YouTube. I don't do debates, especially the ones with the live chat. I just feel like it's being in the Colosseum. And I was debating with, they're called black pills. I mean, black pillars or something. I mean, so many pills now. There's a red pill, the blue pill. I mean, it's like, you know, whilst you guys are like choosing pill colors, I'm helping guys actually get results. That's what I said to them. And it's just like, they want to be in a group. And so I was debating with him, and he believes that if you're below a 5, by the way, that's already, you know, quite subjective what a 5 is. But if you are below a 5, and he puts it down to jawline and height and things like that. And he said, if you're below a 5, you've got no chance. If you're below a 5, you've got very low chance. If you're below a 3, then either you get surgery or you go to Thailand. You've got two options. I was like, what? It's like, so I said to him, have you ever slept with an ugly man? He's like, no. I said, well, I have. Like, physically unattractive man. If he took a photograph of him, you'd say he's a 3. But I was attracted to him. There's looks and there's attraction. Do looks help? Who's going to say it's not going to help? It's a huge agenda, looks. You know, it's advantage, not agenda, sorry. It's a huge advantage for both men and women. But this is precisely, again, why I don't use dating apps. I know that most of the guys I slept with are good looking. I'm not going to, you know, deny that. But there are this section, which two of them were what I consider a 3. And a lot of them were guys who were average at best. And if I'd seen them on the dating app, I would have immediately said, not my type, thank you very much. But because I met them in person, It was something about their character, something about the way they looked at me, the way that they interacted with other people. And attraction is so multidimensional, very complex. There's people, and I'm sure you, I don't know how long you've been with your fiance, but I'm sure you had girlfriends before.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, theoretically.
She's not your childhood sweetheart.
No, she's not. Theoretically, it might be possible there were ones before. Yes.
So, and sometimes we don't know why we're attracted to people. Like, you know, she or he's not even that good looking. Like, why do I keep thinking about them? And I find that interesting. That's what I like to do. I like to look at those kind of cases and say, right, let's break it down. They don't know what they're doing. It's my job to work out what they're doing. I love doing that. I find like social dynamics, the little games that we play intentionally or unintentionally, the way that we feel attracted to somebody and we don't know. I find that so interesting. And I do believe it can be passed on and it can be copied and pasted. I do believe that because I've done it myself and I've seen other people do it. So when you look at people like the Black Pill community from that community and people, as you call them, incels, they've given up. Every guy that comes to me, I always say to them, you know, there's one thing that you all have in common, and that is that you truly love yourself. And I know that sounds really cringe, but I mean it in the truest sense of the word. When you love yourself so much that you don't accept what the outcome's going to be, you believe that you deserve better. You know you're in a bad situation, but this predicament can't be your long-term future, and you deserve better in life. Now, that the only people that feel like that are people who really cherish themselves, who love themselves, and in the deepest sense, I mean. People who kind of, it's like some people might say it's just self-belief, that's all it is. I think it's more deeper than that. I think people who genuinely sit there and say, I'm not having this. I'm taking action. I don't want this life. I deserve better. I think that's something else.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, at the same time, I don't want to, you know, have no sympathy for them. If they feel or they are looked at by others as being a 3 out of 10 for looks or whatever, it is going to make it harder. That's just a fact. And then, but I also think there were some guys I knew at school who were like 10 out of 10s, you know, all the women loved them and they never developed a personality because they probably didn't have to. So I think there are different sides to it. I mean, so let's say someone who is, well, whether they're a 3 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10, they come to you. What are the three sort of common sticking points that men come to you with?
The three most common sticking points is approach anxiety. That's the feeling of, you know, actually feeling anxious about going up to someone because you don't know what to say, and the deep-rooted fear of rejection that comes along with it. But there's a lot of guys who it's just like, I don't know what to say. No one's ever taught me this. The second one is actually running out of things to say. That's a big one. Just going up to a girl, great opener. She responds positively and then you're like, so what do you do for a living? And then the conversation becomes very anodyne, very bland. It's very important that part because that essentially is your sales pitch, that conversation. When I say sales pitch, I mean, what are you bringing to the table? How are you going to benefit her? I'm not talking about financially or anything like that. I mean, are you somebody who's, you know, are you a positive guy? Are you funny? What is it that women like about you? What do you like about you? I always say that to my students. What do you like about you? And then they tell me, well, I like this. And I'm very A, B, and C. And I say, well, how often do you communicate that within the first 5 minutes of the conversation or allude to it? They said, never. And I thought, well, why should she invest in the conversation then? This is your sales pitch. So the conversation is not just about having a good conversation. It's about communicating your value and the qualities that you have that will build attraction. So there's the conversation part. And then the last, the third most common sticking point is escalation. And that's showing intent, flirting, seduction, sexual escalation. Because if you don't do that, you can end up in the friend zone. And that's another very common reason why guys come to me. They say, I keep getting friend zoned. And it's down to the fact that he is too scared to escalate, or he doesn't know how to.
I feel like the friend zone is disingenuous as a word. And it's sort of, if I had a friend of mine who was a woman who wanted a relationship and I didn't want it, I might say something as a bit of an excuse, like, oh, friend zone. But what it really means is because your eventual girlfriend and wife or whatever is also your friend, isn't it? So it's, the friend zone is almost like an excuse to let someone down gently, maybe.
That's you doing it to a woman. When a woman does it to the man, it's because he hasn't made a move, essentially. Women don't really friend zone guys who make a move. They'll just say, I'm not interested, and then usually block contact from that guy. Because they might be polite about it, but they realize that, okay, if I see this guy again, that's going to happen again. He's going to make another move. But if the guy just avoids, making any move at all, then what happens is the woman kind of convinces herself that, he just likes me as a friend. And she's quite comfortable with that, because girls like having male friends. It's fun. It's like 99% of the time it's because the guy hasn't made a move. And so he just prolongs it, and he's just sort of hoping at some point. And I've friend zoned guys, and I've seen people be friend zoned. And the guys are just hoping. They're just hoping that she'll have a change of heart. She'll go out with this guy for a little bit, and she'll realize, like, what a bastard he is. And then she'll come to him and cry on his shoulder, and they'll make sweet love that night. It doesn't happen. It only happens in Jennifer Aniston movies.
Yeah, the rom-coms. So someone's got approach anxiety. They come to you. What do you tell them? Because I can't think of a more... we must all to an extent have approach anxiety, because going up to just someone you don't know and just saying, there's something about what you physically look like, so I've come over to talk to you. I hope you like what I physically look like and what I'm going to say and stuff. That's scary, isn't it?
Well, first of all, there's two types of way of approaching. There's the direct and indirect. So the one that you alluded to there is direct, which is you go up to a woman and you tell her straight away, hey, I think you're hot, or, you beautiful dress, whatever. That's called direct. And then indirect is like a situational observation. Don't you think the music here is like really not on point? Or you could do a recommendation one. You could ask an opinion opener, we call them. And their situation, they are indirect. But direct, first of all, that's what I say to my students. It's like, what would you prefer to learn? It's better to learn both, really, because there's going to be some environments and situations where one works better than the other. But the main thing that we focus on actually is not the opening line. It's the transition from the opening line to the conversation. So we call this it's a transition point. And that's where most men fall apart like a cheap suit. As I said earlier, they'll go up to a woman, hey, how are you? My name's so-and-so. She's like, hey, my name's... And then he's like, right, so what do you do? And then the transition's like really awkward. If you can give an opening line and use that response to really smoothly transition into having an amazing conversation, if you know how to do that, then actually you don't have approach anxiety. Because what we found, and this is me, this is my experience of doing this for years, is if you just focus on the opening line and overcoming approach anxiety, all that confidence that they've built unravels when they realize that they're running out of things to say and they're not getting to step B. So I put a huge focus on conversation skills of that transition. Like, if she says this, say that. You know, if she tells you this, this is how you should respond. This will be more engaging than if you said this. And then once they know how to go to step B, step A, which is the approach, is much easier.
What it's so hard because then you sort of start thinking about conversation, and I start obviously, you know, I have a conversation every day, and you don't really think too much about what goes into it. But again, we're sort of talking about teaching what goes into conversation with someone you have no frame of reference with. It's easy to have a conversation with you because we know what we're going to talk about today. It's easy to have a conversation with my girlfriend because, you know, we have these shared references.
Your fiance.
Fiance. I didn't want to show off again, but with my lovely fiance, because we have so many shared references and histories and all these kinds of things that we could talk about. So someone you don't know, you have no reason to be talking. And also the indirect one, there's this thing of like, that's being unsaid. There's an elephant in the room, which is like, there's obviously a reason I'm talking to you. Then, so the woman's probably trying to work out, or what is it, because he likes me? What's going on? So what kind of things would you suggest that someone talk about?
Okay, so there's a lot of, okay. So with, let me just address one of those points. Obviously, it is difficult to just go and approach somebody. We do it in like parties, you know, there's icebreakers. We go up to people, but yeah, it's less kind of potentially awkward because we've all been invited to the same, you know, and the function or whatever it is, and we've got a point of reference, which is, you know, the fact that we all know the person that invited us or something like this. We all have a point of reference, but you can still find a point of reference with people. That's what we teach, with people that you know, complete strangers. So I'll talk about that in a second. Just to go back to your point about if you speak to a woman and you go indirect and she's thinking, oh, is he or isn't he trying to chat me up? They all know. Okay, guys, message for you. They all know, but I think a lot of women, I prefer direct. I much prefer direct because I like a man personally who's like, just, you know, says, you know, goes for what he wants, not interested in what other people think. I like that kind of guy. But some women, they like the charade. They like to sort of almost lie to themselves a little bit and say, yeah, he does just want a recommendation. Yeah, he is just asking my opinion, because they feel that way it's kind of like they've had some sort of control over the situation, rather than when a guy goes over to a woman, he's got the control. Whereas if a guy goes indirect, she can sort of play along with the charade and think, no, yeah, he got to know me a little bit and then attraction built and he got to like me. And it's like, no, but deep down, she knows, deep down, I can tell you. So what was the question? It was best way to open someone, was that?
Well, I suppose, or just conversation, just what can you talk about when you have no frames of reference?
Okay, so let's talk about, so let's look at this. A common thing that people ask each other is, where are you from? Okay, I always say to my students, let's look at what you are going to be asked and what you're going to ask her. What do you do and where are you from? They're the two questions that always come up. Now, we always have a choice here. We can either give a boring response that won't create what we call multiple threads in a conversation. I am getting very geeky here, I'm aware, but you know, you have to, because you can't just say to someone, hey, have a great conversation and good luck, you know. So an example would be if she says, where are you from? And you say, I'm from London. Let's say she's from another country. And the next question usually she'll say is, oh, you know, do you like it there? There will always, people respond with very boring kind of follow-up questions. They just do. People are lazy. Okay. So you've got to be the one doing the work here, I believe, because if you're interested in her, you've got to do the work. She's just going to give you bog standard responses. So she asks, you know, do you like living in London? Or what's it like? And are you going to go into tour guide mode and start saying, well, yes, London's very nice. We have lovely parks. It's a bit expensive though. It's a bit cloudy. Or are you going to use it as an opportunity to have a very stimulating conversation and convey what I call high value data about yourself? So my example would be, and I'll rush through this a little bit, but if someone said to me, if I wanted to impress someone, and someone said to me, you know, what's it like living in London? I would say, okay, so first of all, it's an incredible, we have an incredible melting pot of different cultures, which I really like, because I like to just meet new and interesting people. We've got fantastic parks, which is great, because you don't always want to be in the gym. You want to sometimes have a nice run with some nice scenery. What else can I tell you about London? I don't know. You know what? It's got this incredible energy to it. And look, I've been to Tokyo, I've been to LA, I've done it all, and they have their own energy. Every city has its own energy, but London has like this undercurrent of excitement, and it's really hard to explain. So that's a more interesting answer. But also, I've shared four high-value pieces of data about myself. One, I'm a sociable person. That was the first one, melting pot of people. So you can't say I'm a sociable person, obviously not. So you have to allude to it. The second one is that I keep fit. And the third one was that I'm well-traveled. Notice how I threw in Tokyo there. You could have just been to one country, and that could be Japan, and people will think you're a jet setter. Because Tokyo is just like, what?
Yeah, also not racist.
Oh, yeah.
The melting pot thing, not racist. One. No. Because you're so not racist.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, and the last one was, I'm attracted to exciting experiences. So it's very important. People just kind of like go into autopilot mode. A lot of guys say, you know, yes, the approach went well, and then it got really boring, and she kind of got bored. It's like, yeah, of course she's going to get bored. There's four other guys that are trying to get her attention. You know, what are you saying? Like, it's not to do with you. You're not like a boring person, I say to them. Because when I sit down with all my students, you know, they've got hobbies and interests and just like interesting opinions on things. But they just don't share it when they're in conversation, because they're going into this kind of what I call polite detachment. Chit-chat is polite detachment. You can't really build excitement and interest and be really engaging if it's just chit-chat. But if you're going, most men are going in with a mindset when they're talking to a woman of playing not to lose rather than playing to win. And I always say to them, well, if you're playing not to lose, you have to look at what am I losing here? And they're not losing a great deal. They think, oh, I've made this much progress with the woman. I don't want to lose that. So they sort of keep to that same tempo rather than being bold. They always say fortune favors the bold. And I actually believe it here to be true. So they, you know, they won't maybe flirt with her. A lot of guys don't do that. A lot of guys don't, they're not cheeky. Cheekiness is a great way to, sort of start the flirtation process. Girls do like cheeky guys, not rude, not offensive, but cheeky and playful. As long as he can take it's banter. As long as he can take it back. And guys feel very, very comfortable doing that with women they're not particularly interested in. But as soon as it's a woman they're interested in, it's like, oh, okay. Got to make a good impression. And when they're thinking good impression, they become the nice guy. They become a filtered version of themselves. And women do the same thing when they're with men. They become something else suddenly. And the guy's like, you know, it's a bit boring this, isn't it? Because we're all playing not to lose when we like somebody, which is the wrong thing.
When I was younger and did approach women, and I am sorry to my fiance to bring it up, but I was very nervous and anxious about talking to them. And I think I thought if I had a good first couple of minutes, I was very tempted to sort of give my number and then just get out of there. And I think it's what you're saying, like not losing. Like, I've had a good few minutes. It can't go better for the next hour or two, really, on the first time we've seen each other. I mean, is that okay, or is that a bad idea?
That's very good. No, what you've done without realizing, see, this is why I love like talking to guys, you know, and hearing their dating experiences, because a lot of naturals, I'm not saying you're a natural, but you know, you could be, I don't know. I have no idea, but
probably.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay.
No, I don't know. What do I know?
Okay. So, what you did is we called it, there's a technical word for it. When you break rapport, that's what you did. You broke rapport. You went and reached a high point of the conversation, thought this is as good as it gets. I'm going to get the number now. If you'd have waited, what happens when you reach a peak in a conversation? There's a lull. And that's when most guys make the mistake of asking for a number. They get awkward and go, oh, anyway, so it was really nice talking to you. Can I get your number? And the girl's like, no, I'm not really feeling it. And if she does give the number, what happens is when he tries to call her, the last memory that she associates with him is one of, it's a lull. It's not exciting. But with you, or any guy that stops it on a high point, what happens is you leave your audience wanting more. I want a bit more of that. Thank you. So when you call her or you text her, first thing that it re-engages her is the memory that she shared with you, that last memory.
That does make sense. That's it. And again, I'm still imagining a lot of people listening just going, oh, this sounds too much like a game. And those are the same people who complain about, you know, hard to get and the games that go on and texting and stuff. And I just sort of think, well, if you look at the other sort of animals in the animal kingdom, that, you know, the games they play are insane. All the funny colours and the flapping around and stuff. You know, do you give much thought to the evolutionary theory about why, you know, it tends to be men chasing women and that kind of stuff?
I just thought that was a very detailed analysis of the animal kingdom, changing colours and flapping around.
Well, we do a version of that, don't we?
Yes, I see men flapping around all the time. I think it's the women that change their colour. They change their hair colour, women, they change their makeup. It's the women who are changing their kind of like, it's the women who are flapping around, actually.
Well, the animals, it's the men, isn't it? It's the they've all got the...
No, of course. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
But yeah, you know what? The flapping around would be the stuff you're saying. The colours are going...
We call it peacocking. Peacocking and things.
Yeah.
But look, I don't... Honestly, I stay away from that whole part, like the evolution. Like a lot of people talk about that, like, oh, men are the hunter-gatherer and the women are this. I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care. What I have here is men coming to me. They say, how do I get better with women? And I say, this is how you get better with women. I just don't find it like beneficial. I would just put it down to men are more horny and they want sex more than women. I'm sure there's going to be people who are going to turn around and say, no, you know, I'm a woman and I'm extremely, you know, horny and whatever. But I think on the whole, men's urges are probably, on the whole, am I allowed to say this? I know you used to work for the BBC. I have to be careful.
Well, I've moved away from the BBC because I decided I wanted to say whatever I want. You can say whatever you want. You can swear. You can say fucking idiots.
I was going to say, I've been really clean. Like, I haven't said the F word. May I ask you something on my interview? Or your interview, whatever it is. Is it your interview or my interview?
It's ours.
Okay. What was it that you really wanted to say when you were working for the BBC that was like the point where you said, fuck this, I'm out. I cannot keep quiet about this one thing.
There were quite a few things. And also I exaggerate, you know, when I say ex-BBC and all that, I made one documentary about exorcism that I sold to them.
Oh my God, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I deal with really... Look, this podcast mostly deals with ideologies and cults and cult thinking and stuff like that. And also just interesting, weird, fascinating, whatever it might be. I'm really interested talking to you because that's such an integral part of who we are and how we meet each other and how we form families and whatever. So that was really interesting. But one of the things I talk about is like woke culture and stuff like that. And I think that was a big thing when it was the BBC, because you have to be so careful about what you say. And it's so nice to be able to have a YouTube channel and a podcast and to just be able to say whatever.
Yeah, but woke is quite a wide spectrum. Like, is there something in woke that particularly was like, no, you know, this is, you can't touch this?
Yeah. The thing that got me was every interview I went to with a producer about a new series I wanted to make, they said to me, look, you're going to have to be off screen because you're a white man. And, you know, look, it's always the way that people...
Did you tell them you're Jewish? That doesn't count, does it?
I did tell them that. Eventually, I did.
It didn't make any difference?
No, at first, look...
Helped a bit?
No, the opposite. I got told that was like super white and there were too many Jews already. Yeah,
Jews are super white.
I know.
Jews are super white. Oh my God. Oh my, I'm sorry. They're Semitic. They're not even technically white. You know, they're not technically, you know, Anglo-Saxon. I think white, oh God, you know, Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Germanic, I don't, you know, Jews are from the Middle East.
Well, they can be.
No, but I meant originally they are Semitic. Yeah. No, they're Semitic. That means their bloodline is from...
I think, well, yeah, but it depends because there's Ashkenazi and there's different kinds of... But the thing is...
I know the difference, but actually that you can trace back, they're still Semitic.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, here's the thing. Because of this whole thing, the fact that you and I are sitting here discussing bloodlines and things like that, a few years ago.
I know, it's so weird.
Exactly. So that's the point. And it's one of those things where when an ideology, when something happens to you, you start to care. So I didn't care before. I was like, who cares? Oh, the woke culture, well, they're just trying to be nice or whatever. Then when it started happening to me, because I'm selfish, it started to really bother me. And that's why I wanted to talk about a lot of that stuff. So that was some of the BBC stuff. And the thing is, the statistics didn't back it up. So I was going into meeting after meeting where people were saying to me, we need, you know, there's not, the minorities are not well represented. And I saw the statistics that they use, and they show that that's not true at all, that actually minorities were sort of twice as likely to be represented on TV and off TV. Another thing would be sort of women are not there. Why aren't there female directors? Because I think only about 20 or 30% of directors on TV shows are women. But what they don't say is that the showrunners, which is a higher position than director, are 80% women. So it's just all this stuff where I thought, why can't we talk about this stuff out in the open? And yeah, so that's what it is.
Okay, very interesting.
And I suppose you must get some of that as well, because I think a woke culture might not be in favor of, I mean, I've heard you talk about like the dating gurus who tend to be men, they get a bad rap. What do you think of that?
They get it really bad, yeah. Some of them deserve it. You know what? The dating, the whole, people think I get a lot more shit than I do. I don't know if you want to call it woke or feminist. I don't know. They seem to not really care about what I do. Or maybe they believe that I have better intentions because I'm a woman. It's maybe not coming from a bad place. Like, I'm looking at it as there's a lot of women out there who are always complaining they can't find a decent guy, or guys don't know how to talk to them. So I'm showing guys how to do that. That could, which is true. And that's possibly the reason why, but there are a lot of guys out there. And it is more like, it's becoming something, it's more relevant now than it was. But a lot of them, and I'm not going to name any names, so please don't ask me to. But there's a kind of red pill movement, and a manosphere, they call it.
Yep. And what does that mean?
There's a lot of them, manosphere.
Oh, and red pill.
Oh, it's kind of connected to red pill. The red pill movement is, well, you know the Matrix. Do you understand the blue pill, red pill?
I know what this is. I just want you to explain it.
Oh, sorry. Okay, of course. So blue pill is kind of like advice such as, you know, just be a good guy, be nice to the woman, listen to her. It's kind of like that more sort of popular culture kind of advice, you know, mainstream advice. That's blue pill. And they believe that that's just not going to get you anywhere. And that's something which has just been perpetuated by feminism and the and mainstream media. And I do agree to that to a certain extent. A lot of it is crap and it doesn't work. And I think if you're too nice to a woman, she'll take advantage of you. Just like I believe if you're too nice to a man, he'll take advantage of you. And red pill is more like, no, this is what women want. And you need to be an alpha male and you need to be the strong, you know, you don't trust women. It's a lot of truth in the red pill, but there's a lot of like a negative side to it also. There's a lot of truth, and a lot of what I teach is considered red pill, to be honest, which is, no, women don't want a nice guy. Women want a great guy. They want an amazing guy, but they don't want a nice guy. And yes, there are women out there who will use guys for dinners and take advantage of guys. I do say all this, but I think a lot of them, these coaches, they're not even coaches anymore. They're just people with YouTube channels. They're YouTubers. I think they're coming from a very bitter place. And that's when it starts getting twisted a little bit and toxic. So they have these shows. Some of your listeners, viewers will know what I'm talking about, but they have these YouTube channels where they bring on women and they humiliate these women. They sort of make it look like they're going to...
What?
Yeah, they have like a group of women. They're, you know... This is in America, and the women are very young, intoxicated a little bit, and they sort of, you know, give them questions. They come on the show, and they're very nice to them at first. And then what they do is they kind of like, not humiliate them, but they sort of, these women are not skilled debaters. These guys will put them in a corner where they admit things. Like, for instance, you do admit that when you hit 25, you expire. Women, their expiry date's 25 and no man will want you. And they promote that. But it's a very kind of like a Jerry Springer show it's become. And you've got, and as I said, it's like the Colosseum. You just look, people are there for that live chat. Go on, call her a Landwell, pig face, things like that. 19, 21-year-old women, not particularly educated. And they go home and they look at those comments, you know. Yes, it's their choice. They were on there. They know what happens on these shows. But I always look and think, how are you helping guys that are watching this? It's entertainment, fair enough. Or are you helping guys? But they're not even like selling a book or a product or anything. They're just sort of using it as a way to just, I think, what's the word I wanted to use?
Humiliate.
To rant. Not humiliate. When you purge yourself, you know. So when you look at a lot of these guys, and there's hundreds of them, they've had very bad experiences of women. And they've come into their own now. They're about usually between 35 and 50. And they've sort of taken the red pill, as they say. And now they realize, you know what? Fuck women. And because they're all like slightly older, these guys, they love the fact that they say, the big thing they say is women expire at 25. She loses all her sexual market value at 25. And I've tried to say, yep, tell that to Jeff Bezos, who married a 52-year-old. Tell it to Simon Cowell, who married a single mom who was 41. You know, these are very successful men, more successful than these guys could ever imagine to ever be. And they are marrying, dating women who are past 25. And the thing is, I do think most men prefer younger women for obvious reasons. Of course. I mean, it's just another, like, it's a stupid thing if you're going to argue against that. But they are relentlessly going on about it. And I think this is a fuck you to that past girlfriend who fucked you over. And now she's probably in her early 30s, mid 30s, even late 30s. And you're having a go at all those women that rejected you, who are now your age. That's what it's all about. And they're coming from a very dark place, these guys. And I think that's what's, they're not giving, look, this is what you should do. You can give your kind of theory with it, your concept of female psychology and male psychology. Fine. But give practical advice too. Like, you know, what do I do if a girl says this? Should I buy a drink on the first date? I don't know, whatever the question is. And they're not offering that kind of advice. Whereas when I was, you know, in the pickup community, which gets a lot of, and I think a lot of unfair criticism, some of it's fair, but a lot of it's unfair. They were actually giving advice, at least, to guys. They were showing them a way out. They weren't telling them to just sit there, hate women, and if she's past 25, don't talk to her, pump her and dump her. They're using language like this, pump and dump, you know. I went on this debate, as I said, on Black Pill, and the things that were said to me were unbelievable. I had a lot of good feedback. I had a lot of guys saying, look, she's absolutely 100% right. She's helping guys. But I had a lot of things, very sexual things said about me in a very, really derogative kind of way.
I'm sorry to hear that.
For me, no, it doesn't hurt me at all. No, but it doesn't hurt me at all. I'm very, very thick-skinned, extremely thick-skinned. But I just felt, my God, no one's helping these guys. They're just fueling this bitterness. Now, when I finished that, sorry, I'm going on a bit, but just to my last point, when I finished that debate on that YouTube channel, my sales rocketed. I remember I got to the office next day and I looked, I was like, my God, it's like we had programs booked out. And I said, these guys have been watching this channel thinking, is there any thing out there that I, like a course or something that I can take to actually help improve my circumstances? And then I realized, my God, they're not selling anything, even these guys. So it looks kind of good, like, oh, we're not trying to sell you anything. Well, no, they're getting ads on YouTube for that shock value, clickbait, humiliating women, getting people riled up. So they are making money. But yeah, that's a good point. They can't teach you anything. They don't have a product to sell, because what would be on that product? Nothing. Anyway, rant over.
No, I think what you're describing, it encapsulates what I find difficult, both about sort of the woke side and the conservative, regressive, sexist, horrible side as well. And it's just the lack of nuance on both sides. And I think on the woke side of things, when they want to have a go at, you know, people like you who just want to basically state facts about certain types of men and certain types of women from your experience of them. And, you know, they want to go, oh, no, that's not true because everyone's just the same anyway or whatever. You know, they're just ignoring reality sometimes. And then on that other side, just negativity, just horribleness, and it's not helping anyone.
I've had more, but it's so weird, like I've had more problems and bad attention from that kind of people who are saying they're trying to help guys, these, you know, people in the red pill community than the woke community. And I was thinking, but it shouldn't be that. Surely it should be the other way around.
Well, that's maybe because you're a woman as well. I don't know. Maybe the men would get it worse from, you know, those kind of men pickup artists would get it more from the woke side.
But I'm not just that, but it's like I'm 42. I have a child. I'm very successful, a lot more successful than them. I own it. I tell my age to everyone. They know I like younger men. It's, you know, they all know what I like, and I own it. And it's kind of like, we can't hurt her. Like, she doesn't look like the standard 42-year-old. So I get all the stuff like, you've had work done. You've had this done. One day your Botox is going to collapse. I was like, I've not had any work done, but you keep going. Thank you for the compliments.
People are insane. Imagine that. Imagine saying that to someone. Something they must be very damaged, hurtful. I mean, look, I'm not involved in that world at all, and I get every day horrible, horrible messages just because I've got a YouTube channel, and just because there, you know, if 1% of the world are psychopaths, and you got what, 7 billion, 8 billion people in the world, that's like, I can't do the maths, but it's like 1 million or 10 million or 100 million.
Why do you get hate for having a YouTube channel? Sorry, I don't understand. Have you interviewed anyone controversial?
Oh yeah, quite a lot. But most of them are. I mean, even you are, right? So someone could write a message about you now, and then they'll go, and who's this stupid Chad or whatever the words they use are. You know, they could
No, you're a Chad. They'll call you a Chad.
Yeah.
They'll say someone, they'll look at you because you're a nice looking guy, and they go, what the fuck does this Chad know about our struggles and stuff?
I've had that.
What does this bitch know? What does this Botox bitch know? I hope they both die.
Yeah. And I just think that's a reasonable response to give to somebody who's just got a YouTube channel, is just helping people to get dates and stuff. That's a reasonable thing to say. And I try and kill them with kindness sometimes so that they can then look at their message. You know, and it's often not about dating or anything. Most of my episodes might be about cults, and then I'll get some old Scientologist going like, you don't know anything. The Lord Xenu will come and kill you and all this. And just, but thank you for messaging. And I say something like that, and then they often write again, and sometimes then they're nice because they realize how ridiculous they've been. They go, oh, I didn't expect you to reply. Maybe I was a bit harsh in the first one when I said that I hope your family's murdered in a horrible accident or whatever, you know, but hello, thanks for replying. So
that's a good strategy. I mean, I just wouldn't have the time. My channel's quite nice. People on my channel know that they'll just get blocked if they're, you can be critical, I don't mind, but if you're going to be rude, you get blocked. And so I have a really nice flow on my channel. But when I go and do people's debates and interviews, ooh, they come out, all the haters, they come out. And I know they're basement dwellers. I know they're sad. I know they hate women, you know, and it's like, it's pitiful. But I know if I met them in real life, they wouldn't say that to me. I've got a gob on me. I'll say things, but.
A gob for non-British people is a mouth, and it means you can be mouthy or insult and say things like that. Just in case, I don't think gob is outside.
My kid hates it. He's like, "Can you shut up now, mummy? Everyone can hear you shouting." Like when I complain,
shut up,
like,
mum.
Shut up, mummy. You're being
sounds
gobby.
Like your kid might. Your kid might inherit some of those traits, perhaps, and hopefully so. I think they're good traits to have. Why do we? I want to get on to. We've got about 10 minutes left, right? And I want to get on to why we attract the people that we don't really want and struggle to attract the people we do want.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it? When you're not in that, you're in the state of bliss right now, but and I've been there.
Yeah.
But oh my God, I mean, everyone will know that at some point there's someone you really like and they just don't like you the same way, and you've got someone, and it's usually around the same time, who's on your case. And you're like, why is it you? Why are you the one phoning me? I don't even, like, I'm being horrible to you now and you're still phoning. And this person, I do everything for this person. I'm nicest, but I'm funny. I wear my best clothes for this person and they're not interested. Okay. It's so frustrating. And I've been there, and I've been the person who's done it to someone, and I've been at the receiving end. What happens is when you like something, you like somebody, you start running what I call anti-game. I came up with this. So it's anti-game is essentially when you really like someone and you're enthusiastic and you know, you can't, you know, when you see them, you're keen and you can't hide it. You try and hide it. You try and camouflage it, but it's in the eyes. And they know, you know, like you're just excited to see them and you're enthusiastic. But at the same time, it clashes with your fear of doing anything about it. And that clash creates anti-game. Now, when you're with someone that you're not interested in, what do you like? You know, whatever, you're yourself. First of all, you're really, really yourself. You've got a take it or leave it attitude. You don't like me? There's a door. You know, this is me. And that's it. And it comes across like you have an abundance mindset without realizing it. The person thinks, oh, this person's not that interested in me. They must have loads of other options. They must be really busy. And these are just things that generally people find attractive about another person. We're not attracted to people like loners who are moping around waiting for the phone to ring, you know. But if you're like with someone who's not interested in you, you kind of get that impression that they are that cool person who's just like so busy and has other options, which is just attractive. So what I say to my students and what I have to do to myself, first of all, you need incredible discipline. So if my student says, look, I really like this girl, but she's not interested in me, I say, well, you've got to do with her what you do with the girls that you're not interested in. And they think, oh, okay, that'll be easy. So I say, well, if she, for instance, texts you, you probably text back 5 minutes later. You know, some guys will say, no, I'll wait it out for like 2 hours, but not anything more than that. Because why? They think they're going to lose her. They think they're going to fuck up. With the girl they're not interested in, they'll genuinely forget for 2 days. Like genuinely forget. It's not even a game. And they'll be like, why is this girl still bugging me? Duh. It's because you're making her wait. You are doing the things that are going to make her, are going to reverse the roles slightly, and she's going to feel like she needs to chase you. She needs to get your attention. You're this busy guy of other things going on. The other girl that you like, she knows you're going to reply in an hour, 2 hours. She knows she can see you whenever she wants. She knows that she could just say, hey, let's go out for dinner, and you'll drop everything and you'll go meet her. And you'll probably put on some little thing like, I need to check my diary first. So please, you're going to be there at 7 o'clock. Now, so I say to him, look, that's the discipline part. That's where you've got to sit there and go, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to text her for like 2 days. It's so hard. People usually cave in because they're so scared they're going to lose that person. So that's the secret for why people can almost smell neediness on someone. So even if you really camouflage it, and there are ways to camouflage it, I'm very good at it now. I'm really good, but it's not watertight. There's always the human, you know, it's kind of like just the reaction in your eyes or the way that you see them or you let them touch you. You know, people you don't really like, you're kind of a bit like that when they start coming too near you. Like you do little squirmy things and you don't even mean to. It's just like you go like that a bit. But if somebody you really like, I'll give you an example. I met a guy, actually he's very famous, not going to lie. And we went for a drink and, we went outside to the smoking area and he put his coat around me. It was very, very cold and he put his coat around me. And then we were talking for like an hour and he said, my coat's on the floor. Can I have it back? And I was like, huh? Like that. And he's like, you've been sitting in the freezing cold for an hour and haven't noticed. And that's because I was so into him. I was just like, fancied him so much. And little signs like that you can see in people, like they just seem to have a lot of time. They want to stay with you for longer. They don't seem to have anywhere to go when they're with you. They don't seem to be rushing off. Think about the people that we don't like. We're always sort of rushing off. We're sort of looking at our phone. We're not fully engaged. We look a little bit bored. And that actually, very sadly, makes the other person think, oh, you know, I want this person to like me. What do I need to do to, you know, create some interest here?
So you have to suppress your real feeling. But that person...
No, you can't. No. You can't change your real feelings. You can try and think about it. Have you ever talked yourself out of liking someone? I haven't.
No, but you can act cool.
Yes. Yeah, so you hide it. I prefer camouflage and suppress, I would say. Suppress means... you're trying to suppress, but you can't beat it. You like that person.
But so this... this person you were seeing, Leonardo DiCaprio. So what?
No, not quite that famous, dear. And he only goes out with under 25s, apparently.
Yeah, that's
so
true, actually. Okay, but you, okay, I'm trying to guess who it is. So you like younger people. So you're 42, was it? So he's probably 37.
No, I like young.
Oh, so he's like
22.
He's 22, this guy?
No, he's actually an older guy, believe it or not. See, that's the thing. I have a type, which is young men. You might have a type, but we often are attracted to people who are not our type.
Okay, so you like this guy. I would have thought if I were him and you've let his coat fall on the floor, I would think maybe you're not into me because you didn't really want to accept.
No, but I was talking to him.
Yeah.
No, I put it on and we were like so, the conversation was so intense and I was so invested in him in that moment that it slid off and I didn't feel the cold. Now, think about it. If I'd been with a guy that I'm not interested in, I would have been huddled with a coat, complaining about the weather, going, when are we going to go back inside now? You know, I wouldn't be sitting out there. You know, you're not fully invested in the moment. So you're sort of looking at...
Do you think you blew it with him?
No, men are slightly different. Men are like, well, if I'm still going to get sex tonight, it's like, I don't care if she's needy. Yeah. That's the difference between men and women. Men will still, it takes a lot for a man to say no to a beautiful, I'm not saying I'm beautiful, but I was beautiful to him. Okay. He found me beautiful. And I think it takes a lot for a man to say no to a woman that he's physically attracted to. Whereas with women, it's attraction is, again, it's less about looks and urges. It's about what they're more audible women, you know, what the guy's saying, his presence, his character, things like that. Neediness can put off a woman very quickly of sleeping with a man. Whereas men, they'll be like, okay, that's a bit ick, but I'll still fuck her. Sorry, I'm being crude about it, but.
When I met my fiance all those years ago, I think I was so taken by her that I was quite needy, and it did, I think it was off-putting for the first few weeks. It definitely didn't help. It would have helped had I been a little cooler, but I couldn't, I hope she'll be listening to this, I could not hold back. I just couldn't camouflage in that instance.
You know what, there's a difference between showing neediness and being keen. Maybe you were showing like you were very keen rather than needy.
I think I was a bit needy as well. I wonder, do you give much credence to that, is that Groucho Marx quote, which is, I would never be in a club who would have me as a member. Do you think there's some of that? Like if we have such low expectations or thoughts about ourselves that if someone seems that keen and into us, they can't be that great.
Yes and no. Again, this is why I like kind of younger guys. I think, you know, they have a sort of excitement about them. They get very excited and they, you know, see something new and shiny. And I think you can kind of like say, no, that's fine because they're young. I think if an older guy was acting like that with me, I'd be like, really? You know, it would be more unsettling. There are different rules for older guys and younger guys. There are different rules. I mean, there are the attraction principles, which remain the same for both, but there's a slightly different style, you know.
This is why I have some sympathy for incels and stuff, because they're saying, you know, oh, it's easy for you to say because you're a whatever, you might be out of 10. I watched your interview with Chris Williamson, for example, and he's been on here as well. I've been on his, and I'm a huge fan of his. But I wondered, he mentioned at one point, he mentioned like girls coming over to him and saying, oh, my friend likes you. And he's like, oh, I don't like that because what do you do? You know, that has literally never happened to me in my life. But he spoke about it as if that's a common thing that happens to men. And he happens to be like a supermodel. So,
yeah, I see.
There are differences. I don't think that's ever happened that I've been in a bar and like a woman's come over, my friend really likes you, you know. And I think that's not necessarily something that happens to that many men.
Yes, but looks are a huge advantage, of course. Most guys, yeah, even the kind of cute ones haven't had that before. You've been dealt, not you, you're an attractive guy physically. I think you are. But you're taken. And you're pretty too old.
I'm way too old for you. I'm 33.
Oh, God, no. You've expired, yeah. Darling. You've expired.
I expired 8 years ago.
No, but seriously, look, this is the card that a lot of people have been dealt. That's it. There's no point. Like, yes, you can maximize your looks, you know, as much as you can. But at the same time, you know, it's a pig and lipstick at the end of the day. So you've got to work on other things. So I'll give it a personal example. I'm 42 now. Yes, I've aged well. Yeah, I know. But I can't compete with 25-year-old Kezia. Like I was a babe. So if 25-year-old Kezia walks in and 42-year-old Kezia walks in, apart from the MILF guys, that small section of society, most people would have just gone to 25-year-old Kezia. But I can sit and bitch about it and buy myself a cat. I would never buy a cat, but I could sit there and be miserable and go, look at men. Men are just so superficial. That's all they care about. I'm really intelligent. Why don't they like me? And they like that 25-year-old bimbo version of me. Yeah, I could sit there and say that. Or I could say, well, hold on. I've got other things that I need to work on here. I can't compete physically. So I've got to work on my sex appeal, my body language, my conversation skills. I've got to work on these things. You've got a choice. Either you quit and become bitter, buy a cat, or you take action, you be realistic. That's about being realistic, is looking at the situation and say, what do I need to do in order to create a better outcome, short-term and long-term?
Well, there's also, that's a split, you know, not just in dating, that's everything. There are some people who think, who have that sort of feeling of like, oh, well, I've been dealt a rough hand, there's nothing I can do. And there are some people who are like go-getters, you know, and that's the sort of, I don't know, someone like Jordan Peterson's always pushing for that. He's like, get up, make your bed, and all that sort of thing, you know, do something about it. I was getting a bit overweight, a month ago, and I didn't notice it happening, but it just happened slowly. And I suddenly realized I was about 10 kilos overweight, but I made an instant decision and lost like 10 kilos in the last month. Cause I just stopped chocolate and, but some people won't. And they'll go like, oh, there's something wrong with me. But that is tempting, because I almost sort of did feel a bit...
There's something wrong with me. I'm getting bigger and I don't know why. God, that's denial.
It is tempting, you know, because I sort of became a bit more slobby and I stopped like wearing nice clothes because I started to feel a bit like, oh, what's the point anyway? And anyone...
Did you start doing the Homer Simpson thing where you wore a dress in the end?
That was when you were... I love that.
You got so big, you just wore a dress. I love that episode.
Well, to an extent, yeah, because I was getting like bigger t-shirts and bigger things. And I was just like, oh, these other t-shirts seem to have shrunk in the wash. And I think then I had to sort of snap out of it.
You're in denial. You're in denial.
That's what happens, I think.
But that's, yeah, it does happen with everything, dating, getting in shape, just bettering yourself. We all, like, so many of us have been dealt a bad card in different areas of our life. Some of us went to private schools, some of us went to terrible state schools, some of us come from broken families with the worst possible parents you could imagine, and some come from very loving parents. It's a bad start for the other one and a good start for that one. So what are you going to do, sit there, hate on your parents, hate on the world? The thing is, there's always been the people. You could literally divide the world into two and say the ones who take action, the ones who just accept it for what it is, and they don't take action and they don't do anything with themselves or better themselves. But the difference is that those people used to sort of just get on with it and you never heard from them. Now they've got platforms, you know, and they're on these live chats and things in terms of like the dating, or even in the, I've got to be careful here, but overweight women, like I've got to be careful here, but you know, this whole thing, like I don't want to put down overweight women. I don't, but you know, this whole thing, like I'm healthy and I'm morbidly obese. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that's a big platform now they've got saying that. And usually those people who are morbidly obese sort of, yeah, they quit dieting, they quit trying to get healthy, but they just sort of were quiet about it and got on with it. But now, and it's like these, I don't want to talk about it too much, but it's like these dating guys or anti-dating, they're now like, say, they're like got huge followings for the black pill and incel movements saying, just give up, quit. They are dressing up, quitting. They're dressing up quitting as enlightenment. That's what's dangerous. Cause when you experience enlightenment, what happens is you take action. You don't go down, you know, down a negative path. You go through a positive one.
So again, I think what you're describing is the woke thing on one side of being overweight and it's fine, be proud of whatever you are, you don't have to do anything. And then the other side is sort of saying the same thing of like, well, you're shit anyway, give up, you're useless. And we're somewhere in the middle. We're saying, no, you can work on yourself. You can do, let's progress. And that thing about, yeah, the morbidly obese thing, again, there's ways to talk about it and deal with it. Cause there's also, I don't think it's good to encourage people to be like that. But then also, again, just to go back to Jordan Peterson, when he said there was a woman.
But I also don't think you should be horrible to them. Sorry, this is very important. I don't like it when people say, look at that Landwell about a fat woman or something. It's like, leave her alone. No, but they do. And I think, leave her alone. You know, you don't know how she feels. Maybe she doesn't care. Maybe it's water off a duck's back. You don't know, though. This person could be very fragile. I don't like humiliating people. I just also don't, really want to be told that morbidly obese is healthy. It's like smoking is healthy. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no. Like I said, I lost 10 kilos in the last month or two. I feel better. I am more healthier because I've eaten better.
Well, if you've got another 10 kilos, you could have been in a Dove advert.
Yeah, I could have been in one of those. But yeah, that I don't know. Like Jordan Peele was very rude. That was my issue when he said that about the woman who was on the front cover of whatever it was. You know.
Yeah, I don't like insulting and being rude about people and making fun of them. I don't like it. I don't like it on women. I know that sounds like what men feel too. I know, but. Women do get criticised on their looks far more than men, I find.
No, so. Absolutely. Well, tell people, where can they go and get your stuff and your Twitter and your books and all the gear?
Stuff. Okay, so just go to the website, kezia-noble.com. I am on Facebook, Twitter. My Twitter account is more political, so I think that would bore some people. Instagram's like loads of sexy photos of me. <I'm joking>. No, it's the main thing is my website, kezia-noble.com, and my YouTube channel. If you just put in Kezia Noble,
okay,
you'll find me on there.
Good. Everyone, go do that, especially if you're single. But even if you're not, you'll learn a bit about dating and what everyone's up to and all that. Kezia, thank you so much for being on The Edge.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you to my guest, Kezia Noble, who was great fun to talk to and very elucidating with her information about social relationships and dating. Go check out her website. It's in the show notes. It's just kezia-noble.com for her course, her free ebook, and also a link to her YouTube channel, which is just her name. So do go support our guest and subscribe to her. Support this podcast too on patreon.com/andrewgold, where you'll get ad-free episodes and occasional bonuses and things like that. Also come say hi in the YouTube chat, which is alongside the video premieres of each episode, which is, you know, out on Monday and Thursday at 9 p.m. UK time. That's 4 p.m. Eastern. There's quite a crowd that gather and say hello. Not everyone, you know, says hi. Some people lurk in the shadows and I don't even see their names or anything. But if you do want to say hello, there's a little chat box. Anyway, also, yes, thank you for reviewing the podcast. Please keep on doing so. It's on Apple and that. On Castbox, actually, somebody called Heather wrote, "Joining ISIS is unforgivable. No exceptions." That is in reference to my recent episode of Andrew Drury about Shamima Begum, the woman who, at 15 years old, left the UK to join ISIS. And Heather says, "No forgiveness." Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you, Heather, for commenting. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you next time when my guest is American psychologist Todd Kashtan on the art of insubordination and social relationships and curiosity. See you then.